Hello everyone and welcome to episode 36 of the Xbox Central podcast with me, your host Jez Corden, and I am joined by fellow Xbox writer Matt Brown, and we are the only Xbox podcast hosted exclusively on WindowsCentral.com. We've been on a bit of a hiatus, or a break I guess, because of busyness. We had E3, we had all the Surface stuff, and it just felt like every week there was something else came up. And finishing college, right, Matt?
Yeah, I'm all done now. I'm a free man, so it's all good.
Yes, so we're going to try to get back on schedule, back in the flow, the podcast flow, you know.
Yeah, and we'll hope. Because last podcast was 2 months ago, I think, looking at SoundCloud, so.
We're gonna do our very, very best to try and get this back to a weekly state again, and we're gonna have so much to talk about between now and November when the Xbox One X launches, Microsoft's beastly 6 teraflop console. So, as usual, we're gonna start with what we've been playing lately. Now, we don't have to go through the whole 2 months of what we've been playing.
Yeah, I was gonna say it could be a long list. Whole 2 hour podcast what we played. Do you want to kick it off?
Yeah, if we just start with what we've been playing.
This past week, because we've had the Ultimate Game Sale going on the past week, so both of us have been spending a ridiculous amount on Xbox One and Xbox 360 titles. So I went and picked up Ghost Recon Wildlands finally, because I remember a few people being excited about it at the time. And also, every single week, it seems to top or go towards the top of UK charts. So I was like, I probably should just give it a go. And I'm really enjoying it. It's probably one of my favorite Ubisoft titles in a while.
Really? Are you playing it solo?
I played it solo so far, yeah. But then I can see how the co-op will probably make it a lot better as well.
Yeah, we streamed it. Me, Zach and Dan streamed it on the MGL show on our Mixer channel, mixer.com/WindowsCentral. we streamed it on there once, and it was pretty fun. I really wanted to get a patch for Xbox One X because they prioritize draw
distance.
It's
going to be Xbox One X enhanced. It's been confirmed. So yeah.
Oh, okay. Because they prioritize draw distance over resolution and anti-aliasing. So like, while it does look amazing when you're in a helicopter and you can see really far away, when you're on the ground, it's like, wow, this looks like a PS2 game.
It's not
that bad, but it's like.
But sometimes when you're crawling around the floor and stuff.
Yeah,
it comes through. Yeah,
yeah. You can see where the compromise has been made. So, yeah. Xbox One X enhanced version, that should look pretty gorgeous. I would expect.
Yeah, because I was thinking about Ubisoft games I've enjoyed recently. Oh, whoops! Just knocked my mic. Good job. I've been thinking about Ubisoft games I played recently, and if you look at games that released such like For Honor, I enjoyed that, the actual concept, but then the execution wasn't so good with networking and stuff. You know, I like Rainbow Six Siege, but outside of that, Watch Dogs 2, I wasn't too enthralled about. So I could probably safely say it's one of my favorite titles in a while. The actual, because even though it's still the same core like Ubisoft formula, I feel like there is some kind of fresh aspect to the gameplay. They've kind of taken some traits from a Division and worked it into a more open world kind of game, because there's still like a lot of people have said that it's similar to Just Cause in terms of setting, but then there's like that serious tone of something like the Division.
Yeah, it's very similar to the Division in a lot of ways. Like the gunplay feels similar, but
I think you said at the time that it was kind of like they had yanked the mechanics out of Division and put a new map in.
Yeah, pretty much
in some ways, but.
They did a pretty good job of disguising it all. Well, maybe not really, but there's no bullet sponges at least.
Yeah,
headshots actually work in Ghost Recon, which is a good thing.
Did you play the game stealthy? That's the only thing I'm wondering.
Yeah, I did play it a little bit stealthy, a little bit hardcore. You know, I sort of. It's funny that you think it's like your favorite Ubisoft game lately. I just sort of I got bored of it because it was like. It's the same Ubisoft stuff over again, you know, kill these guys and you unlock more guys to kill. And I just got grinded down a bit by that. And because I reviewed the game, I think.
Yeah, you did.
I ended up getting bored. Felt like repetitive again. But
maybe it's because I've kept my distance from those kind of Ubisoft games for a while, because I was never hugely invested in Assassin's Creed. The Division, I fell off pretty quickly with. And Watch Dogs, I only played like a couple hours.
Yeah, I think
so.
That
maybe
might be what
I've
it
just
is,
taken
you know?
A break.
Yeah,
but you were pretty heavy with the Division, weren't you?
Yeah, I was, and I got a sour taste from the Division still. So maybe that's what it is. Like just memories of the bad memories of the Division. And sort of like it does feel like you're playing the Division over time. But you know, it's a solid game. And also if you play in co-op, like the Division, it's pretty fun. The Division should have been a four player, you know, action shooter rather than a quasi MMO that failed.
Well, if they just removed the bullet sponges and everything, you could get headshots and you could get instant kills, then I probably play Division more. I think that was just something I hated so much.
Yeah,
because everyone just felt so drawn out for no reason in that game, and that was the reason I couldn't get into it, I think.
Yeah, I hear you. And the RPG mechanics weren't robust enough to make up for the fact everything was a bullet sponge. Like, everyone ended up running the same build. There was no real class structure in the game. And yeah, we could do a whole podcast on why the Division is not a great game. But we won't do that.
And then another thing I've been playing this week. It's kind of, we're in that kind of patch where there's not many big releases. So it's kind of hard to get new games.
Yeah, it's a summer.
So I've been playing the new Battlefield 1. Map that dropped, Neville Knights, I think it's French, I didn't speak French, but it's a night map, and it's set in the trenches, so it's like probably the first true trench map in Battlefield 1, because it's like a common setup of you have two sets of trenches and like no man's land in the middle, and it's also the first night map in the game, so that's a pretty nice change of scenery and stuff.
I haven't tried yet. Really,
but that it's weird. It's a free DLC drop, so you don't have to pay anything for it. But then it's only available to premium members. But
it's only available in premium.
It's only available in premium. But then they call it a free update because it's not one of the main actual core DLCs that are part of a expansion. A part of the premium pass. But then if you are playing with friends who also have premium, now you can get access to premium maps because they have this like premium sharing thing. So as long as one person in your lobby has it, then you can play on those maps.
Confusing.
Because I think they've been kind of diluting their player base. So it's kind of a way to get more people into the new maps without actually selling them to people.
Yeah, so. I suppose that's something at least. I've got Battlefield Premium. I always get premium. I'm part of the problem.
I got it for Hardline and I never used it again. So.
Yeah.
I spent a sour after that.
The way I think about it is, like, I'm going to spend hundreds of hours playing this game, so I might as well get the most.
No, I've definitely got the money out of premium for Battlefield 1, at least so far.
Yeah.
So
I definitely got my money's worth from Battlefield. I think I had it for Battlefield 3. I definitely felt I got my money's worth for that, so
yeah,
that's why I ended up getting it again for Battlefield 1. And But I haven't played it lately. I need to go back and give that.
We should go back and stream it sometime.
Yeah, we should. We definitely should.
Anyway, what have you been playing?
Well, so what have I been playing lately? I've been playing a little bit of everything. I've been trying to like make an effort to play more games, even if it means that I can't complete them all the way through. Just play them just to get an idea of them, sort of thing.
I feel like I should have taken that approach a while ago because I've got a lot of games in my backlog, and I feel like I should just probably start them, play half an hour, and then just say I've touched them.
Yeah.
It's like this guilt thing where I see like 300 games and I've played like 10 of them.
Yeah, there's still loads of games that I really want to try. There's still loads of games on my backlog that I haven't even touched yet. But this is one game I picked up in the sale called This War of Mine. I don't know if you know that game.
I looked at it because I was looking at games. I did a piece a while ago on games and their approach to war. Have you played Spec Ops: The Line?
No, I haven't.
Because that's a game that kind of approaches war with like a more less glorified kind of tone, and This War of Mine is another game that's that has like a similar kind of approach, right?
Yeah, it's I think it might be the most depressing game I've ever played, followed closely by Life is Strange. It's so depressing. It's like in This War of Mine, for those who don't know, This War of Mine is like it's a side-scrolling 2.5D survival game, basically. I thought it was a zombie game for some reason, but it's not very much not a zombie game. It takes place in a country torn apart by civil war, which is, you know, pretty relevant nowadays. And pretty much relevant throughout human history, because that's apparently what we like to do is kill each other. But it's set in the civil war, and you play as a bunch of survivors who are trying to survive in this sort of war-torn war zone. You know, you can't escape because there's snipers everywhere, and you have to wait till night and then go out and scavenge supplies and stuff like that. But the real darkness of the game is that your characters are just not, they were just normal people, you know, going about their everyday lives, and now they're having to kill their fellow man to just for a scrap of food to eat. So like, if you do get desperate and you are starving, you know, and you end up having to kill basically innocent people. Yeah, like I ended up killing a priest and stealing and raiding his fridge. And then one of my characters, you know, when he got back home, he fell into like a deep depression and ended up killing himself.
Oh my god.
He hung himself. Whoa. You know, which was just so dark.
Oh my god. I didn't realize it went that far.
Yeah, it does. And it's so I had a choice between, you know, going without food for another day or letting this guy sink into a deeper depression. And because he had like sadness as a stat, but after he killed this innocent guy, he went all the way from sadness to depressed to broken, and then he killed himself. And I was just like, wow, that is so dark, you know. And so you have to manage their needs, you know. And if you do end up doing stuff like that, the other survivors in your base comment on it, and it's like, I can't believe he did that, you know. And you can sort of like try and, you can get your other NPCs to like comfort each other, and you can get drunk to manage the player's mood, and you can read books and stuff like that to try and take your mind off what's going on. But it's a very, very dark survival sim. But it's also very, very good. It's very well done. And it's pretty poignant, you know. So I've been playing that. I've also been playing XCOM 2. Which I still haven't completed because it's so hard.
And they've got a huge expansion coming soon as well, haven't they?
Yeah, they've got a huge expansion coming. So I've just been sort of trying to get through it. And I started again from scratch the other day because I was just struggling so bad on every mission. Because there's this whole base management aspect to the game where, if you're not managing your base very well, the enemies will outpace your soldiers in terms of power. And I just got to this point where the enemies would just seem so much stronger than my dudes because I hadn't prioritized my research properly and hadn't prioritized my upgrades properly. And now the enemies were so much stronger that my dudes were coming back from every mission half dead. So I decided to start over and be a little bit smarter about the strategy. But yeah, XCOM 2 has a huge expansion coming up, which adds a load of new factions to the game, loads of new story missions. XCOM is such a great game. It's like there's so much to it.
I just need to get into it. You keep on saying about how good it is, and I really need to give it another go.
Yeah, it's just tremendous. I just can't get over how good it is. It's like my personal perfect game, you know. It's unforgiving and super hard, and you know, it feels cheap when you save scum through the game. Like one of you guys gets permakilled, and then it's like, ah, damn it, and then you reload a save. It feels really cheap, but. It's fine to do while you're learning the game, I think, to, you know, accept the reality that you're probably not going to win on your first playthrough. Yeah. And stuff like that. But yeah, XCOM 2 was a great game. I've been playing loads more strategy games lately. I've also been playing Prison Architect, which is, you know, strategy sort of similar, building prisons and stuff, which is...
I reviewed that when it first came out on a console.
Yeah,
The only gripe I had is I remember the controls were kind of fiddly on console. Have they fixed that at all? Or
I didn't think they were too fiddly. I suppose they're a little bit fiddly compared to, like... I thought Cities Skylines was very intuitive.
I feel like that's kind of the... that was almost like a perfect kind of console port.
Yeah.
Cities Skylines. compared to, because I feel like there were still some remnants of the PC version on Prison Architect when I played. It might have changed, or maybe it just doesn't affect you as much. I don't know.
It does use a mouse cursor at times, which doesn't suit the game very well. But yeah, it's like, I think it's playable, you know. I just want to mention one more game that I've been playing called Avon Colony. And now I need to mention this because I actually screwed up published the review a month before the embargo day. Now, I was just so tired, and I didn't read the PR email properly, and I just saw the date, and I thought, okay, that's the embargo date. And like, I just scanned over, and I put it in the system as the full review, blah, blah, blah. So I reviewed this Avon Colony game, which I was supposed to only preview, not fully review. I was supposed to preview the first two levels, so I'll do that on this podcast now. But Avon Colony is it's an upcoming... It's basically City Skylines in space, where you set up a colony in space across a bunch of pretty gorgeous alien worlds. And the idea is that you land on that planet with very little, and you have to farm and you have to build bases and make sure your citizens are happy and make sure their needs are met and they've got clean oxygen, they've got the right food, and then you can manufacture products and stuff using the resources on the planet. And you have to deal with alien threats like alien spores come and try and eat your buildings and stuff like that. And when I reviewed it, I had complaints about the way the game ran on Xbox One, but the dev, they weren't, well, the PR company said they weren't annoyed about me publishing the review early, but they're going to take my complaints and they're going to fix the issues that I had with the game. So maybe it could end up being a better game.
It could be a good thing.
So I had problems with the lag, but they said because there was lag as your colony grew, there was some lag. But they've said they've identified that issue and they'll be patching it before launch, which is great. So that was pretty much the only big issue I had with the game was this lag. I thought it was shipping like that, but it's not. It's going to get patched and it's going to be fixed up before launch. So
read your emails properly.
Read my email story. Is the moral of the story. But the game seems really cool. I'm looking forward to checking it out again when it's been fully patched up, and I'll have a proper review up. Because I'll go back and write my review based on when it's been patched. But definitely keep Avon... If you're into strategy games and simulator games, keep Avon Colony on your radar, because I think it could be a really good, you know, game for people who are fans of City Skylines. But yeah, that's pretty much what I've been playing lately. That's pretty much everything.
Well, I guess that'll be a good time to segue into something we want to talk about. The Ultimate Game Sale has been going on from June 30th until July 10th. It's the big sale of the year, really, for Xbox.
Yes.
They've been doing it for how long? Because I think probably about 5 years now, right? It's been quite a while that they've been doing a sale.
It's kind of their answer to the summer Steam sale, isn't it?
Yeah. It's almost as good. It's getting there.
Yeah.
But I don't know. In my personal opinion, this year hasn't been as good as last year. I feel like last year there are a lot more titles I was really jumping to pick up. And like there's some good sales if you've been looking at some games here. Because how many games are there? It's over 300, right?
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot of games.
Over 350 games, yeah. There's some games that I've wanted to pick up for a while, and I've bought them, but there's nothing that's been like I wouldn't have picked up if it wasn't for the sale. This time around.
Yeah, I mean, there's a load of games that I picked up just for the sake of it. Like I picked up Assassin's Creed on backwards compatibility just to digitize it because I got the physical copy. I picked up the Ezio collection as well just because I got the physical copies and I want to digitize them. I bought a load of 360 games that I just wanted in digital format. But the rest of the games I either already owned or just didn't want. Like I don't want FIFA 17 and Formula One. I don't care about sports games, but and the rest of the games I already own, like Far Cry Primal. That was a good was a good deal. If you like the Far Cry games but missed out on Far Cry Primal, it's definitely worth picking up. It's one of my favorites. There's some other good deals on Halo Wars 2 is 50% off. That's a pretty great deal. And then Metro Redux is always on sale. It's 75% off. If you don't know Metro Redux, just go buy it. You know, it's
yeah, I was going to say, how much is it this year around? Because last year it was something like £3 each per game.
Yeah, it's the same. It's like £8 for the whole bundle. So
yeah, that's like amazing.
That's like $10 or something.
It's especially Last deal. Light. Last Light is an amazing game.
Yeah.
I love that game so much.
Yeah, it's a brilliant game. All the Resident Evils are 50% off. I might go and digitize them, even though I've got no intentions of playing 5 and 6, because they're terrible.
There's also a lot of Play Anywhere games available on sale right now. So, like, Snake Pass, that's £6. Spheroids, that is £3.35. In dollars, that's, like, $5 or something.
Yeah, something like that.
So if you want some cheap Play Anywhere games... there's some good options here as well.
Yeah, I might give those games a look, because I haven't actually. Subnautica, I might pick that up as well. That's 33% off. But I keep seeing Subnautica appear on Reddit and people talking about it, so I feel compelled.
It also has VR support, so I was considering playing it in VR on my Vive.
Okay.
But I don't know, I just stabbed a bit of a bullet, so I'll see. Also, another thing... well, actually, it's... Hold on. Let me just double check. Yeah, it's not. Life is Strange isn't on sale this year, is it? Oh, no, it is. It is. Oh, well, it is. Okay, so go pick up, because the new season's going to be dropping soon.
Yeah, you know, I checked out...
Oh, £4. Just like, so about $5 for the whole season.
Oh, wow, that's a good deal.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you... Okay, that's... You just buy that now. that's an amazing game. And the first episode of season 2 drops in August, so...
I saw that behind closed doors at E3.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, I'm jealous now.
It's the only BCD I've been to behind... BCDs means behind closed doors. It's the only BCD I've been to where the audience applauded at the end. and people had teary eyes from BCD.
Really?
It's Life is Strange, you know. It's a different developer, you know. It's not Don't Nod Entertainment, which I think a lot of people don't realize, and I was worried about that fact, but because Don't Nod are working on a vampire right now, which is an action RPG set in London about vampires, which also looks great, but this dev, they've really captured the essence of what Life is Strange is meant to be, and the atmosphere and the characters and stuff, and also Chloe has a different voice actor as well, but I didn't even notice. I didn't notice that she had a different voice actor, so...
Yeah, I was going to say, because if they've changed a pretty major character's voice, I was kind of worried that was going to change up some stuff for...
She has, like, the same inflections and the same sort of mannerisms as Chloe, as older Chloe, because Chloe's 16 in Before the Storm, and I guess she's, like, 19 or 20, maybe, or 18 in... So she's older in the original game, so so you would expect some change in voice maybe anyway because of the age difference, but the inflections and the behavior and the attitude is, you know, it's Chloe, it's just Chloe, and the original voice actress, can't remember her name, she consulted on Chloe because she couldn't reprise her role because of the voice actor strike.
Yeah.
So that's the reason the voice actor strike.
Because it was something she wanted to do still, but
she just
she couldn't.
Couldn't because she's in the union, which is fair enough. But they've really captured who Chloe was, and they've captured what Life is Strange is. I'm not going to spoil what happened in the BCD, which is why I haven't written a preview on it actually, is because I just didn't want to. I don't want to spoil any part of it. I
feel like it's a game you can't really go and replay too often. Because it's more of an experience you go through.
Exactly. So I didn't want to write a whole article on the fact that it is Life is Strange, and it does feel like Life is Strange, and they got everything right, and you know, there's no Chloe doesn't have any powers. It's just going to be a straight sort of story based adventure game about Chloe and what was her name now? I can't remember her name.
Max and Chloe.
No, Max isn't in it. If you pre-order, you get an episode as Max as a child, but it's about Chloe and Rachel Amber. That's her name, Rachel Amber,
that's it. Okay,
the girl
who
goes
missing
in the original game. So it's about finding out the events that led to that. And Rachel Amber is basically a Laura Palmer allegory from Twin Peaks. You know, it is basically Twin Peaks, the game.
And anything Twin Peaks you love. So yeah,
so, I mean, there was a bunch of Twin Peaks references in Life is Strange as well. Like graffiti and stuff like that. So the influences are pretty clear. But yeah, if you're a fan of Life is Strange, I think you got nothing to worry about with Before the Storm. But yeah, where were we? We're talking about the Ultimate Game Sale. Went off on a tangent.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good 360 games in there. I bought Grand Theft Auto 4 and all the DLC for Grand Theft Auto 4 as well to digitize it. All of Fable is on backwards compatibility as well. The Fable Trilogy, Fable Anniversary, Fable 2 and Fable 3. I might pick up Fable Anniversary, actually.
I was going to say, I haven't played Anniversary. I need to give that a go as well.
Yeah, I need to do that too. So. I'm surprised they never released that on Xbox One, actually. Also, you got Destiny.
Oh, wait, Fable Anniversary isn't it backward compatible?
Huh?
Fable 2 and Fable 3... are backwards compatible, but Anniversary isn't.
Weird.
So
weird.
Nope, forget that. Not buying that then.
Forget that then. Yeah, screw that. My 360 is gone away somewhere. Well, it's back in the UK in a drawer.
Yeah, mine's hidden away as well. I got it out once for what game was it I got it out for recently? Oh no, I got it out to play Catherine a while back. But then that's backwards compatible now, so
God, I love backwards compatibility. Isn't it wonderful? Isn't it wonderful?
I'm still honestly surprised that Crackdown hasn't come to backwards compatibility. They have to coming up to the Crackdown pre-launch, but
I've got a feeling they might just bundle it or something, maybe.
It could be a good like pre-order incentive or something.
Yeah, maybe.
I guess. But
where is this game? I've just found another game called The Bureau XCOM Declassified.
Oh, that was originally going to be an FPS, wasn't it? Set in the XCOM universe. And then at the last second, they changed it into a third-person game.
Well, I don't know what it is. I've never heard of it, but I'm going to buy it because it's got XCOM.
Oh, really?
I've never heard of it. Is it? It's not a strategy game.
No, well, it's like strategy elements blended into a... A third-person shooter, I think.
And it seems to be set in the 1950s or something.
Yeah, it's 1950s, yeah.
Wow, I'm going to buy that. I didn't.
Have you never seen it?
Backwards compatibility. Oh, it's not on backwards compatibility. I'm not going to buy
it. It released in like 2013, I think. So it was towards the end of the 360.
Wow, I've never heard of it. But I wasn't into XCOM then, actually.
That's a game that you should probably go back and look at the pre-release stuff, because it was originally going to be an XCOM first-person shooter, and I was really excited because I hadn't played XCOM before then, and I was quite looking forward to picking it up, and then at the last second they pivoted to a third-person game, and I kind of lost my interest for it.
That's weird that they do that. Metal Gear Rising is on Games On Demand as well, on sale, but it's not backwards compatible either. See, part of me thinks, should I buy these games on backwards compatibility in case they become backwards compatible? Like Metal Gear Rising is one of my favorite 360 games.
I've got a copy of it.
So good.
That's like one of the few physical games I have left.
So good.
I got the Steelbook case or something.
So do like I got the Steelbook.
Yeah. I still need to play it. But I've heard good things about it as well.
Hang on, you've got the Steelbook but you haven't played it.
Yeah, I do. You can't. You've got so many games and you never play them as well. So it's you're guilty as well.
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, the sale's really good. Basically, is the point we're trying to get across here. The full list of the sale is currently pinned to the top of majornelson.com. And
also, there's an article on Windows Central if you want to go through our site.
Yeah, but.
But it's harder to navigate, actually.
Yeah, that's why we just got it down. How are people going to find that article?
Yeah.
Well, we could pin it to the podcast, I guess. We'll put it in the podcast description for those who are interested.
But something I have noticed is looking at this sale, even though there's a lot of backward compatible games, if you're looking at all the games on sale here, especially towards the end of the list, there's still a lot of titles which aren't available.
Yeah. I mean, there's still work to do with backward compatibility. I mean, just having a quick look at this list, you know, Metal Gear Rising, that's not backward compatibility yet.
I can't believe Fable Anniversary isn't.
Fable Anniversary, you'd think that would be because it's Microsoft. Yeah. And you've got like... let's look through this list.
Resident Evil 6, I'm surprised that's not.
Yeah, but that's been re-released on Xbox
One. Oh, yeah, it did. Yeah, okay, no.
You've got Silent Hill HD Collection. Now, Silent Hill HD Collection is buggy as hell on 360, but I'd still like it to come just because there's no other way I'm going to be able to play it. I suppose I could get it on PC, if it's even available on PC. I don't know. You've got The Darkness.
Also, the Darkness there's a lack game. Of Tomb Raider games as well.
Yeah, that's weird as well. Mm. The Darkness. I really like The Darkness. Do you ever play that game? It's like a,
I never played Darkness.
It's like a comic book style shooter where you can turn into a monster. It's so gory. It's amazing. The Darkness 2.
Oh, no, I remember this game. Yeah, no, I never played it, though.
Yeah, but. It's a very good game. It's a pretty good game. But yeah, there's still loads of games that I'd like to see here, backwards compatibility.
Spec Ops The Line as well. That would be good to recommend after our previous discussion. But no, that's not available.
Yeah, guess, and the Hitman HD pack. Go back and play the old Hitman games. Mafia 2. And, you know, it's funny because we were discussing talking about the original backwards compatibility as part of this show. And, you know, I just saw Mafia 2 isn't backwards compatible yet. And then you've got Mafia 1 as well on the OG Xbox, that which I'd really like to play. One of the reasons why I haven't played Mafia 3 is because I feel... I got this weird OCD where I want to play the previous games in a series before picking...
You want to get, like, the original experience, like, what they intended you to get.
Which is why, like, you know, I went back and played
XCOM. Why I haven't played Mass Effect either that much, because I missed all the previous ones.
Exactly. You know, it's... I got that, and now it's like with OG backwards compatibility, maybe there's a chance I can play Mafia 1 before playing Mafia 2 and then eventually moving on to Mafia 3, even though I know the games aren't related at all.
It would be pretty good if Microsoft started selling, you know, like on Steam they have the franchise bundles where you can buy all the games. So if you could buy like the Halo bundle, which would include like the OG CE and Halo 2, or like the Mafia bundle that includes like the titles across OG Xbox, yeah, 360 and Xbox One.
I think there's an issue with that though, because the Xbox 360 store still seems to have some weird disconnect with the 360 with the Xbox One store. Like when you buy a 360 game on the Xbox One,
it pops out into that separate kind of tab.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know why that is. I need to try and ask someone and find out what
the fact
is.
That you can't view prices is what really annoys me until you open that separate tab.
Yeah, it's like why?
Because you think, like, even if it was simply just, like, fetching it from a page or something and shoving it into Xbox Store, it surprises me that that's not been done yet.
It is weird, but what are you going to do?
But yeah, talking about OG Xbox, that got announced at E3. We haven't been able to talk about that yet. Two titles announced so far, Crimson Skies, High Road to Revenge, and Fusion Frenzy.
Haven't played Crimson Skies ever, so that would be cool to go back and give that a try. And
I've heard good things about it, but I haven't played it either.
Yeah, that's the real... That's the benefit of OG backwards compatibility. And, you know, for me, as someone who was thoroughly addicted to World of Warcraft during that era, I missed out on so many great games. And I was kind of lucky because Knights of the Old Republic was backwards compatible on the 360, which is where I played it. But there are so many other games that I didn't play, you know, like Mafia 1, and there's games that I'd really, really like to go back and experience again, like Manhunt and the original Max Payne games, and, you know, all of those are available on the original Xbox, but it's about whether, it's this whole licensing thing. It's like, we saw quite a lot of 360 games hit the Xbox One, but I can't imagine we're going to see anywhere near the amount of traction with the original Xbox, because licenses agreements would have expired.
A lot of studios have just dissolved gone. Since then as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And like a lot of those studios, like they would probably have, I assume a lot of these franchises are just kind of lost in limbo now and they're not going to be touched.
Exactly. And it's
which
like,
is kind of sad.
Who do you go to get the rights for games that like whether the studio doesn't exist anymore, like Mercenaries and stuff like that, you know?
I think it's going to be mostly Microsoft Studios titles which are really gonna
I imagine he's so.
Hitting a program, because Phil Spencer did say that the library is not going to be as big as 360, which is understandable. I'm just wondering how much they're going to have.
Yeah.
I really want to see Shenmue come. That's like the one title I'm really looking for. It was Shenmue 2.
Yeah.
I really want to play that. But then I was trying to buy a physical copy of it, and it's like £40 to £60. So that's like, I don't know, $60 to $80.
Wow.
It's ridiculous.
That's because it's rare, you know. It's rare, yeah. Rare to get. So, like Phantom Dust, for example. Phantom Dust was so rare to get as a physical copy before they re-released it. That people, you know, were charging a premium for it because it was such a rare game to get and collectors wanted it and that sort of thing. So, you know, it'll be interesting.
A lot of those Japanese games are hard to get because they got a load of Japanese imports which came over, which were only released in Japan.
Yeah.
And those go for crazy amounts sometimes.
Yeah.
It's all niche games.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. I think it's going to be games from either the big studios that have completely got the rights locked down, or it's going to be games from independent studios that are still around. Like the Oddworld team were kind of teasing that they might bring Munchie's Odyssey and Stranger's Wrath to Xbox One through OG Xbox backwards compatibility. So there's going to be some cool games, I think, there, hopefully. And we'll just have to wait and see, I think. But yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Speaking of E3, I suppose we should at least briefly touch... I mean... It's pretty old news now, but we should at least briefly touch upon what we think about the Xbox One X and where we think Microsoft is going to take it. I don't know if you want to start. Have you got any thoughts on the Xbox One X? Because there is sort of controversies surrounding its price and people wondering, like, will it... You know, I mean, Michael Pachter this week, famous industry analyst who's, you know, a bit hit and miss sometimes, but he just predicted that the Nintendo Switch would outsell the Xbox One X and stuff like that.
I can see that, honestly. Because the thing is you got to look at, because you'll agree with this as well, that the Xbox One hardware is now a family, similar to how you get Surface. You have a Surface family, you have the Surface Pro line, you have the Surface Book. You have Surface Studio, and they're different devices all within a category.
Different devices and, for different people, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the same kind of direction they're taking Xbox now. So you have the original Xbox, the big fat one, Xbox One, is kind of being phased out now. It's kind of old hardware that they're not selling anymore. But then you have the X and the S, which kind of coexist. You have the S, which is the entry-level model, which starts at what price is it now? It's $250,
I think.
Yeah. Which is pretty affordable for a console. And then you have the X, which is going to be the really high-end one for the passionate gamers. And, like, in terms of actual raw sales, I don't think the Xbox One X is going to be that successful in terms of the... In terms of the numbers driven by other consoles, like looking from an outsider. But then what Microsoft is doing is they're just driving more people into their actual ecosystem. And the more people you have in the Xbox ecosystem overall, because all the software will run across that entire Xbox One family, is just going to be something good for them. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Nintendo Switch outsells it, because the Nintendo Switch is the entire platform, isn't it? But then with the Xbox One, you're going to have all these different devices within the console family. So I would have preferred to have seen the price lower just for getting people on board. But then what they're offering for that price point, there's going to be people who will buy it anyway. And what you're getting is still like really, really good value. Because we did an article, and a few other outlets have, of you wouldn't get that kind of performance out of a PC for that price and the kind of library they're offering. And even though it's going to be a lot to pay out, I think that the Xbox One X could be a pretty enticing package for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think one of the things they're really trying to sell right now is the fact that it will bring enhancements to games that aren't attached to a 4K TV.
Yeah.
Like, I saw a quote from Phil Spencer the other day, and he was saying that it wouldn't just improve things like draw distance and anti-aliasing and effects and all that sort of stuff, but it's also going to improve things like, the physics, you know, the density of physics and the amount of things that can happen all at once, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, for example, in Dead Rising 4, they always make a big deal about the amount of zombies they got on screen. Maybe the X1X version of a game like Dead Rising could have even more zombies than the Xbox version and stuff like that.
If that's even possible.
Yeah, if that's even I mean, physically possible to get all that on screen without, you know, bumping the resolution. But, you know, it's things like that, and it's ultimately going to be up to developers how they utilize that power. Like, Ark Survival Evolved, for example, is a pretty resource-intensive game because you can build in it. You can, it's got a lot of procedural stuff happening and taking place, and stuff like that. So it's that instead of boosting the resolution on Ark Survival Evolved, what they've done is they've instead of boosting it to 4K and having sort of a 30 frames per second experience, they're boosting it to 1080p and having a 60 frames per second experience while retaining other visual enhancements and that sort of thing. And, you know, they're pretty adamant that isn't possible on the PS4 Pro. So, like, while the PS4 Pro might provide some benefits to existing games, the Xbox One X, in theory, going to have like sweeping changes to existing games that will completely change the way they play. And Ark Survival Evolved is one example of that. So I think Microsoft are going to be driving hard to establish that as a selling point for Xbox One X. Whether they can pull it off or not, I don't know. But I guess we'll need to see how that plays out.
During the marketing so far, they've really pushed the 4K kind of aspect. But then, with these Xbox One X enhanced titles, they don't guarantee... The branding, I think, is something you've got to nail, because they have the Xbox One X enhanced titles, which don't have to have 4K, don't have to have 60fps, don't have to have HDR, don't have to have any of those benefits. It could be running at 720p 30fps if they really wanted for an Xbox One X enhanced game. It just needs to be a game that is changed in some way by the Xbox One X console, correct? So it's... something, because on their on the actual retail packaging, they're gonna show on the boxes that a game runs at 4K, and I think that just in terms of the messaging from the console, they really need to drive home that there's gonna be improvements for everybody, and it's just not, it's not gonna be exclusive to just the TVs, 4K TVs.
Yeah, I think
we're just like a limited market.
They're gonna struggle with that. Because, you know, your average game... But that's the thing. The Xbox One X is not for your average gamer. That's what the Xbox One S is for. And you know, I suppose, like, the average gamer will understand that the Xbox One X equals better visuals, you know. They'll understand that, but how do you demonstrate that? And, you know, average gamer doesn't understand teraflops and that sort of thing. So,
most people don't, even, like, a techies.
To be honest, I don't fully understand what a teraflop is. I just know that more is better.
Yeah.
But, and regular consumers will understand that more is better, you know. And Microsoft will be able to claim in their marketing that it's more powerful than the PS4 Pro and more powerful than the PS4, and they'll be able to claim that certain games do look better on the Xbox One X. I don't know which, and, you know, it depends on the marketing deals that Microsoft will have with these companies. Like, I've already, you know, we've already seen some evidence that some studios want to downplay the difference between their games across devices and stuff like that. And it's weird that they want to do that, because it's long established that the PC version is always the best looking version, no matter what. If you've got a high end rig, the PC version will be the best version, unless you've got lazy developers like Warner Brothers or, you know, Nier Automata hasn't been patched once on PC, which is really annoying. But, you know, in general, the PC version should at least look the best and have the best, you know, frames and the best resolution if you've got a PC to match. But as far as consoles go, the Xbox One X version, in theory, should provide the best experience across all multiplats, which, you know, should make it a big selling point. You know, if you are buying a PS4 Pro because you want the best visuals from the console experience, then it's no longer the best place to be. The only people buying PS4 Pros now, in theory, are people who, you know, want the PlayStation ecosystem.
Yeah, or they're looking for a slightly cheaper 4K experience.
Yeah, I guess so. But the thing is, if you are
reaching out for 4K, then
if you are in the 4K ecosystem, then you're probably not concerned about an extra $100. Yeah, that's the thing. I think you're right that the Xbox One X won't be like a sales blockbuster, but it's
gonna... they're not even making huge profits on the hardware to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. But it's gonna, you know, it's like Daniel Rubino put it best. He said, "Did everyone just suddenly? Because like everyone was saying it won't sell 4K. 4K is not important and stuff like that. People who were downplaying it, like Daniel Rubino put it best, and he said, like, are we just collectively deciding that 1080p is enough now? You know, are we just collectively deciding that? Because that's never happened before. No one collectively decided 640p was the best, you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
720p was the best, blah, blah, blah. You know, people, we always want more, and technology progresses, and the Xbox One X is the first legitimate 4K console on the market, you know. So, in that respect alone, it has a unique selling point. So,
just going back to what you said earlier about different studios adapting different techniques and stuff, I think also another thing that Microsoft's going to have to overcome is the fact that, because you were saying about how different studios are going to implement their Xbox One X support differently, how that is communicated to consumers, because Microsoft's not going to be able to even control that narrative, are they, of how games are running from third parties.
Yeah, it's difficult, and you know. It's difficult.
If you have a game, if you have, say, I don't know, Star Wars Battlefront running at 4K 60, and then you have Destiny running at like 1080 30 on Xbox One X, how are you going to explain that to a general consumer? But then the person who cares about 4K that much to be upgrading to a 4K console, are they going to know enough about the technology? Or does the average because we've spoken about this before, but if the average person doesn't care so much about 4K, and this is a console more dedicated towards enthusiasts and stuff, then does it really matter that different studios are going to be offering a kind of, well, communicating a bit of a messy message about how
exactly
the console performs?
Exactly. I think like the only guideline developers have to follow when building a game for Xbox One X is that none of the specs can be lower than the Xbox One version. So, for example, they couldn't make, for example, if Battlefield 1 is 1080 60 on Xbox One, they can't make, or 900p
with crazy physics or something.
They can't make 4K 30 version of Battlefield 1 on Xbox One. Like, everything has to be improved. So they can't sacrifice one aspect to improve another on Xbox One X. Everything has to be improved in some way. So
do you think we could see developers potentially purposely throttling the original Xbox versions? Because do you think original Xbox owners are going to be at a disadvantage because of this? Because to begin with, studios just aren't going to be paying as much. Well, they're still going to pay attention to the Xbox One, because there's a big install base there.
Hmm.
But then, is there going to be less of a drive to provide the highest visuals on the original Xbox because they've got to produce Xbox One X versions?
Well, this is one of the interesting topics of conversation, and it's something that Microsoft seemed to be very keen to control the narrative on, is just how easy it is to bring games to Xbox One and the Xbox One ecosystem now. I mean, they always talk about developers who are porting their games over from PC rather than porting their games over from Xbox One, and they're always talking about how easy it was, how they got it running in 2 hours and stuff like that. So Microsoft do seem to be pushing this idea of how easy it is to bring a game from PC with PC assets and then scale it backwards to the old consoles. Yeah. And that's one of the things that the new Xbox One X dev kit does, is that it allows you to squash the settings of the console to match, you know, your targets, whether it's a mid-range PC or a high-end PC or an Xbox One S or an Xbox One X. You can scale the Xbox One dev kit up and down, and that's why it has more RAM, so it can at least in some way mimic a higher-end PC than what the Xbox One X is, which is why the dev kit's more powerful. So the idea is that the Xbox One X is the one-stop dev shop for all Windows-based gaming, whether it's on Xbox or PC. And I think the idea is that developers won't be porting from PS4, they'll be porting from PC. Obviously, some developers will be porting from PS4 because not every game has a PC version. But the
vast and also majority, there's a big install base over on PS4.
Exactly.
And a lot of developers are still going to tailor their games over to that big install base.
Exactly. So there is some potential issues there, but the idea for Microsoft at least is that developers will port from PC and then squash backwards to Xbox One S, rather than port from PS4 and go up. And they're doing all sorts of things to try and make it easy for devs to port from Steam. Like, for example, you can now match... This is something you couldn't do before on Xbox, but now you can. Is you can match your Steam achievements up to Xbox Live's API and just literally just port them all across with a little bit of work, compared to what it used to be anyway. Apparently, it used to be quite hard to bring a game from Steam to Xbox One and then you have to rework all the achievements. But apparently now you can bring the game from Steam with the Steamworks achievement system and then convert it to Xbox One in an easier way. I'm not saying it's like instant or whatever, because I don't know, but I've been told by a dev that they've made it a lot easier. So there are things Microsoft are doing to make the developer roadmap or the developer mindset of, instead of porting from PS4, porting from PC. That's what Microsoft are telling devs. And
I think that's something that's been a pretty big push of Microsoft's vision in general across all their efforts, because they have all these bridges of bringing applications between different platforms. And I think Microsoft now realizes that the whole company now realizes that they're not the only company that exists in people's lives, and that people are going to be on different platforms, and there's going to be people aren't just going to stick to the Microsoft ecosystem, because that's just not viable nowadays. There's some experiences you get from different developers, different publishers, that kind of thing, and there's different locations to pick up your digital content and stuff, and there's always efforts to kind of bring them together. And if you look at, say, Sony, they are still very very careful to... like, the crossplay fiasco that happened recently, Sony is still very committed to keeping their ecosystem enclosed in some ways. But I feel like Microsoft is a lot more open to accepting that other platforms do exist and people are invested in these other platforms.
Yeah.
As a whole.
Yeah, it's definitely... There's a lot of things. There's a lot of forces at play when it comes to development, and people, like, you know, it's very easy for us to think like Microsoft are a big rich company. They've got $100 billion in the bank. They should just be able to throw money and make everything happen overnight. But you know,
there's
all sorts of factors that feed into this.
That's obviously not happened with a few of our investments.
Oh, so. God, yeah. Let's not talk about Windows Phone on this podcast, but. You know, it's
control yourself, Jez.
Yeah, control myself. It's complicated, you know. It's really complicated, and Microsoft are doing all they can. You know, it's not just money. Some of it's strategy, some of it's, you know, goodwill, and some of it's just a simple case of Microsoft's goals don't align with the goals of a studio who have their own autonomy and their own, you know, their own mentality about how they want to do things, and that sort of thing. So, yeah, well. We've been podcasting now for almost an hour, so I don't know if we wanna move on to our question of the week. Are you up for that, Matt?
Okay, sure.
Okay, cool. So this week's question for Xbox Central comes from @SeanMichaelUK on Twitter, and he asks us to discuss, Microsoft has taken some major steps to bring in Windows 10 gaming and Xbox together. Where do they go from here, and what are the long-term goals? Now... It's an interesting question, because I actually had a discussion with someone at Microsoft about this recently, and also I had discussions with people who work on the store team at E3 in mid-June, and I talked about all sorts of subjects, and I also wrote a big critique of the Windows Store for Gamers a few weeks ago, which we'll include in the article when this podcast goes out. But basically, the my article basically said the Windows 10 store sucks for gamers. to put it in a short form. There's casino games everywhere. There's just mobile games next to core games. And there's all this consistency with branding. Like, some games have an Xbox banner, some don't. And it's so confusing. You know, if you're like a casual gamer and you're expecting a certain experience, the Windows 10 store does not provide consistency right now. And it's interesting because... It's interesting that Sean brings up this topic now is because in my discussion with Microsoft recently, they showed me how the store has evolved based on, you know, user feedback. So now the casino games are at the bottom of the store where you can't see them, and the recommendations are also, the recommendations have been removed because there's not enough games in the store for them to have a meaningful algorithm right now. So, like, they've removed that completely, and there's a new column on the Windows 10 store for PC games that are, you know, that were designed for PC, not for touch.
Yeah, I saw that the other day when I was navigating around the store. They had a section. What was it called? They called it like. There was a special term they were using. I was just trying to find it now, and they had cornered off a load of
core PC
core PC games.
I'm trying to look, but the store won't load for me right now. It's stuck on the spinning cogwheel.
Premium PC games.
Premium PC games is what they're called.
Yeah. And when you click on that section, premium PC games, it includes Gears of War and all that kind of stuff, all the Xbox Live enabled games. Well, actually, hold on a second. If you want to have a quick look for yourself, I just linked it to you. But it's, it contains all the games from proper publishers, I guess you could say. Which haven't been built for mobile. They've been built specifically for PC and console.
See, that's interesting. But this is the dilemma they have, you know, because the Windows 10 store, it's converged between PC, core PC, and also mobile, and also tablets, and also, you know, casual games like Candy Crush, which apparently does a lot of traffic for Microsoft, Candy Crush, believe it or not.
And, that came pre-installed with the Creators Update, didn't it?
Yeah, it came pre-installed with Windows 10, I think.
Or was it Windows 10 in general?
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But you know, those casual games they do a lot of you know traffic for Microsoft. So it's not like they can bury them completely because people actually play them and like playing them. So like looking at the store now, there's like for me at least, there's a new PC games list which has. Broken Age, Forza Motorsport 7 pre-order, Cuphead pre-order, and then a couple of... There's a Gameloft game there, which does have PC controls, I guess, and there's Abzu and Phantom Dust, and Yooka-Laylee is there. So it is improving, you know, but I've got some thoughts on where I think Microsoft should take the store, and I've said this to Microsoft as well. Basically, I don't think they should try and compete with Steam at all. And because they're just never going to win. Steam
is not viable, I feel. Steam's a powerhouse at this point.
Steam has achieved cult status. You know, there are people who will, even if the Windows 10 store is objectively bad, there are going to be people who just use Steam because of the memes and the culture and the community around it. It's because Steam has evolved beyond a mere store platform. It is now this sort of. It's a cultural icon for gamers, and specifically PC gamers who feel like they get a lot of value from it. You know, Steam sales and Gabe Newell and the memes and Half-Life 3 and all that stuff. You know, the only meme that you can attribute to Windows 10 store is Games for Windows Live, and PC gamers are never going to forget that, at least not in the near term. So I said to Microsoft, instead of competing with Steam, offer something different to Steam. Make it so all the games in there are Xbox Play Anywhere, and differentiate yourself. And the reply I got was, well, PC games have to be cheaper on PC because of market forces and you can't resell PC games and you know the cost of PC games is lower because there's market forces dictate that PC games are just cheaper. It's the way it is. So because of that, an Xbox Play Anywhere game has to have a single price across console and PC. So for some developers are like, for example, City Skylines is available on the Windows 10 store, but it doesn't have Xbox Play Anywhere. But it's also cheaper on the Windows 10 store to match the Steam version. But the Steam version has more updates, and it has more DLC, and it has mods. So it's already kind of like, why would you buy it on the Windows 10 store anyway? There's literally no reason to buy it on the Windows 10 store because it's an inferior product right now. So what I said to him was, make your Xbox Play Anywhere, and even if it's more expensive to match the Xbox version, at least you get that consistency of the experience. And it's like, okay, I know that the Windows 10 store is a store for Xbox game for people who also have an Xbox PC, and they want that experience and that consistency of the experience. So I said that all games in the Windows 10 store should be Xbox Play Anywhere, even if it means they are console priced, because you're never going to sell them on the Windows 10 store over the Steam version anyway. So at least make it more like a console experience for people who want that experience. I want the console experience on PC. I want Xbox Play Anywhere because I've got a Razer Blade and I've got an Xbox, and I prefer playing on Xbox. But there are times where I want to play on my Razer Blade as well. But I want Xbox Play Anywhere. I don't want to buy City Skylines twice, you know. That's where I think they should go. I think they should work on differentiating themselves from Steam rather than trying to chase Steam. And they should leverage Xbox Play Anywhere as the unique selling point for the Windows 10 store, for games on the Windows 10 store.
Well, do you think that these features, stuff like Play Anywhere, is something that appeals to a mass market? Because for you and me, we'll buy games because they're Play Anywhere. But do you think that Play Anywhere adoption has really been what Microsoft hoped?
Well, that's the thing. It hasn't, because it's inconsistent. You know, you don't, if you're on a Windows 10 store and you click on a game, a PC game, chances are it's not going to be Play Anywhere, because especially if it's third party. Yeah. So it's like, why would I buy Ukulele, for example? Ukulele isn't Play Anywhere. Why would I buy Ukulele on the Windows 10 store over Steam, where I'm going to get mods and all that sort of stuff, potentially? I don't know. But City Skylines is the best example for me, because it does have extra DLC on Steam, and it does have Steam Workshop, which gives you loads and loads and loads of mods. So why would anyone in their right mind buy City Skylines on PC from the Windows Store? Nobody would, unless it had maybe Xbox Play Anywhere, you know, because then you get something unique from that experience, something that Steam can't match. And at least then, even if it doesn't drive up Windows 10 store adoption, at least Microsoft can say, we're doing something different to Steam. Yes, the games are more expensive, but here's why. It's because they are console games for your PC. You know, you get that console experience. You get the security of UWP. You get no hackers. You get the games running in a window rather than taking over your whole computer. You know, you get proper multitasking and stuff like that. And you also get Xbox Live achievements, you get save syncing, you get all that console experience and that console consistency and security. And that's what we're offering from the Windows 10 store. But if you don't want that, if you want Steam, if you want freedom, if you want mods, if you want the Steam community and all that sort of stuff, then by all means, go over to Steam, and we're not trying to compete with them. I think that's what Microsoft should do. I don't think they should try and compete with Steam, because they're never going to win. They're never, ever going to win.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I think they should do. They should try and bring the console experience to the Windows 10 store, because they're the only kind of people who are ever going to buy anything from the Windows 10 store, I think.
Mm, yeah. And also, I think for just communicating with developers, the actual benefits of having Play Anywhere would be something that would probably go a long way. Because I've spoken to, I don't want to name any developers, but I've spoken to developers in the past who have Windows 10 and Xbox One versions, and they said that Play Anywhere isn't something they've considered, and there were people who were pretty high up who they didn't really know Play Anywhere was a thing.
As well, you know.
But I was kind of like, wait, what? but Because if you look at games like Yooka-Laylee and Cities Skylines, they have versions across both of them. And there's some games where they have Windows 10 and Xbox One versions. The achievements will transfer between the console and PC, but then the sale of the actual purchase of the game and saves don't.
Yeah, so that's devalued.
There's already some kind of link there, and they just need to because stuff like saves and the actual purchase transfer, I don't think would be that hard to implement.
No.
Especially from what Microsoft says. I'm not a developer.
All about the price structure. It's all about a developer will say we need this, or Microsoft will say we need the game to match the price on Steam, and because of that, it can't match the price on console, and because of that, it means we can't have Xbox Play Anywhere on this title. I'm sure indie devs would prefer to have Xbox Play Anywhere where possible, because it's an easy way to add value, and there's not going to be a load of crossover. For example, Cities Skylines isn't losing a sale from me because they haven't included Play Anywhere on Xbox on Windows 10, because there's absolutely no way I would buy it twice just to get save synchronization. I'd much rather just buy the Steam version and get all the extra stuff, you know. So they might as well just add that value on and make it more expensive to match the Xbox price, to add that extra feature in, you know. And then Microsoft aren't treading on Steam's toes, because they're not undercutting them either. They're just offering something different. And this is something that Surface does, because Surfaces are overpriced, you know. That's just reality. They're underpowered, they're over-engineered, and they're overpriced. What you get with Surface is something different. You get something unique, you get Alcantara fabric keyboard, and you get ridiculously thin, sleek looking. They look different, you know. They're a different experience, and the Surface laptop is so expensive and so underpowered for what it is. You can get much better devices that are cheaper, like HP Spectre and Dell XPS 13, arguably, and stuff like that. But the Surface laptop is unimaginably beautiful. There are no screws on the thing. It's got this amazing fan grill that just sort of fades into the back of the device. It's got speakers embedded in the keyboard. It's this device is sci-fi, man. And this is what you're paying for is the experience at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And because of that, Surface isn't selling that well. But it's almost like Microsoft doesn't want it to sell that well, because it doesn't want to tread on the toes of its OEMs who sell Windows, you know. It doesn't want Surface to be the ultimate best solution, because that would kill HP and Dell, who it relies on.
I think
on.
It's a problem with being a platform owner, because when you have something like Windows, which is literally a central hub for everything that exists within computing, you don't want to step on anybody's toes, because if you're stepping into games, then you're going to hurt Steam, which is based on Windows, even though they would never move away from Windows, but it's still...
Yeah, I mean...
You, there's relationships there.
Yeah, Microsoft shouldn't want to hurt Steam, and especially if it doesn't want to piss off core gamers, it shouldn't want to hurt Steam. So what it needs to do is, it needs to do what Surface is doing and not undercut Steam, but offer something different. Offer me consistency. Offer me Xbox on every title. Offer me Xbox Play Everywhere, Play Anywhere on every title. Offer me that experience, even if it's more expensive, so you don't undercut Steam. Offer me that experience. Offer people an alternative way to Steam, rather than trying to compete with Steam. And I think that's the only way the Windows 10 store is ever going to see any form of popularity, is if they make it Xbox for PC, rather than we want to be Steam. Because we want to be Steam ain't never going to work. You know, it doesn't work for good old games. Yeah. It doesn't work for, you know, any other platform that Steam has killed or crushed or crushes. You know, it doesn't work. So that's what I think about that. I don't know if you've got anything to add, Matt.
I don't want to throw a wrong quote from someone, but I think it was when I was talking to Chris Charla when I was out in San Francisco. But I might have picked this up from something you said previously. I don't know. But it was something that kind of stuck with me, that Microsoft originally pushed Xbox Live integration, and it was something that was originally in a couple titles, and it was slowly adopted, and then it became mainstream. And when I've been talking previously to people at Microsoft, they've said about how they look at Play Anywhere of something like that, where it's still in its early stages, but then once companies begin to see the return on it, then that is going to be something that might be more widely adopted, not only within their ecosystem but across the industry. And they set up these foundations for creating this ecosystem now, and it's just kind of driving adoption and making it clear to developers that they're offering these kind of benefits to gamers. I think it's because they've started to establish everything now, and they're just kind of building on that. And I think it's now solely an image problem for Microsoft. They have the core framework there for what they want to do, and it's really just getting it actually into action.
Yeah, I mean, so, it adds value. It's a yeah. cheap way to add value to an indie game, for example. I mean, even if I never use Play Anywhere, it's like a nice option to have, and yeah. And it differentiates them not only from Steam but also from PlayStation as well, where it's kind of yeah. like if someone does own a PlayStation and a PC, they might think twice about owning a PlayStation if it means that they can get those PC games on their Xbox as well. So I think, but also it's the whole consistency thing. If they want, most people using the Windows 10 store are probably casual anyway, and you know, the casual gamers want, you know, you got to have consistency. And like I mentioned before, some of the Xbox games on there, they've got Xbox Live banners on them on the thumbnails. Some of them don't. Some of them have Xbox Live integration, like Microsoft Studios games, and some of them don't, like the Gameloft games. They don't have Xbox Live integration half the time.
I don't know why Microsoft doesn't use the Xbox app much more than they do right now. Because I know they want to keep the Universal Store, but then at the same time, I feel like they could use the Xbox app as a better way of driving these premium Windows 10 games. They do have some there, but like, I just opened the Xbox app right now. The first things you see, right at the top, so you see Halo Wars 2 on a big banner. Then the next game you see is Roblox Asphalt 8, Risky Crash Traffic, League of Gods Glory H2. Why the hell do they not have the premium games right at the top there? And someone's not going to go to the Xbox app to go play Bubble Witch 3 Saga,
no.
are they?
I
really don't know why they don't cut that into the more premium area.
Yeah, it's a mess, you know. It's a big mess. I think they need to like figure out something. They need to figure out a strategy and stick with it, because at the minute it feels like one person says, "Oh, let's do it this way," and another person says, "Let's do it this way," and there's no clear unified strategy. You know, I think, like, why even have the Windows 10 store in the Xbox app at all, you know, if you're going to put those sorts of games in there? You know, get rid of it completely and leave the Windows 10 store. Focus on the Windows 10 store as the place for Windows games, you know. And or alternatively, give us the console consistency that Xbox is famous for on PC, call it Xbox for PC, and don't compete with Steam. Offer us a console experience on PC with Xbox Play Anywhere and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, they just need something consistent and concise and understandable that sort of is easily understandable. Like, for example, people recognize Xbox as a console brand, and I've been told by people at Microsoft that when people see a game on the Windows Store with Xbox branding on it, they think it's not going to work on their PC because they think it's a console game. So they need some kind of new branding, like Xbox for PC. Because then it's like, ooh, does that mean it'll work on my PC? And then it's
because us, we know that the Xbox brand isn't limited to PC now. But for the average person, they think that's limited to just a console. The Xbox is a console. Yeah,
I mean, for as terrible as Games for Windows Live was, at least you understood what it meant, you know. Xbox for PC, if they had that kind of branding, or, you know, Xbox for Windows or something like that, at least you would know that it is that console experience for your PC then. And it's different from Steam, but it still works on your PC. So that's what I think they need to do. But will they do it? I don't know. I don't know.
Hmm.
But yeah.
And also just seeing now as a quick thing to before we finish off, I just noticed they added a Xbox Game Pass section to the Xbox app now, where you can view all the Xbox Game Pass titles on a PC.
Oh, that's cool.
But then they have all these Xbox 360 titles, so you can open all these games because you can now install Xbox One games from the Windows Store. They also have 360 games. When you go to click on a 360 game, it asks, there's a see price thing, so you have to click it separately, and then it pops it out to a separate tab on your internet browser. So there is still that disconnect between the 360 and the Windows 10
that
score.
Must be a
it's
contract
weird.
Thing or something, like, I don't know. I need to ask someone why that is.
Yeah.
It's got to be some sort of weird database issue, but I don't know. But anyway, I think that was it for episode 36 of the Xbox Central podcast.
We are back and regular, we hope.
Yes.
Hour and a half, that's our average podcast length, so
indeed.
We're doing good.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll be back on a weekly basis from now on, now that, you know, things are a bit quieter and stuff like that. We got games,
especially the next few months, because there's not going to be any huge releases. We got Gamescom coming up, which we'll both be going to. Maybe we could do something in Gamescom, something exciting.
Yeah, that'd be cool. See. I'll bring microphones and stuff, and we could do a podcast at Gamescom. But it's going to be quiet, you know, over the summer. It's there are some big games coming out, like Fortnite. I'm looking forward to Fortnite. You know, we talked about Life is Strange, and I think
I'm wondering if Microsoft's going to push Gigantic more. Because that was originally pushed at their press conferences,
Microsoft.
But then since then they've kind of kept it quiet. Yeah.
Oh, that's because
and now it's going to officially release.
Yeah, I know the story behind that. You know, it's they originally received funding from Microsoft, I think.
Yeah.
But now they've got their own publisher, Funcom. So Microsoft has nothing to do with them anymore.
Oh, so they don't really care. Yeah. Oh, it's still an Xbox exclusive though. So
is it Funcom or Perfect World? I think it's Funcom. I don't know. They've got their own publisher anyway. And that's why Microsoft aren't really pushing it anymore. But,
Perfect World. It's
Perfect
World.
Perfect World. Okay, I got that right. But, so that's the story with Gigantic. But Gigantic also looks pretty cool. There are some cool indie games coming out soon. But
Life is Strange is something I'm looking forward to as well. So
you got Cuphead later on in September.
Oh yeah, Cuphead as well. Yeah,
and Destiny 2.
Oh, that's been too long. I'm looking forward to that so much.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. I pre-ordered Cuphead. Yeah. You can pre-order it now on the Windows Store, and we'll put a bot.
I don't normally pre-order games nowadays, but I feel like as a game I can pre-order.
Yeah, I agree.
Because even if it's a broken heap of crap, then I still want to buy it because
the artwork. Like,
it's principle at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll put a pre-order link on SoundCloud for people who want to grab Cuphead. But
it's also pretty cheap as well. So
yeah, $15, I think.
Yeah,
$15,
$20, £16. Yeah.
Which seems cheap to me for what it is.
After the time I was expecting it to be like 30 at least. After a wait.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But anyway, I think that's it now for us. We'll be back next week, hopefully, with a new show. If you want to follow us, Matt, where can people find you on the internet?
I forgot about this. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Matt J. Brown. And also, I now secured the Instagram name, so you can also follow me on Instagram, Matt J. Brown. Exact name. I'm trying to go for a universal
thing.
How
did you acquire the Instagram?
I don't know. It was just free one day, and I was like, oh, I'll take that.
Oh,
so
lucky.
Because I used to have like random dots in the middle of my name, and then it just appeared one day, and I was,
lucky.
Won't complain.
you can follow me at Jez Corden, JZCORDEN. Message me, you know, send me an email, jez@windowscentral.com, if you've got any tips or you've got any podcast questions, suggestions you'd like to hear us discuss. Also, don't forget to follow us on mixer.com/windowscentral for our streams. We do giveaways every week, and you can check out our stream schedule on the page. And stay tuned to Windows Central for all the latest and greatest from Xbox. We got some exciting developments happening over at Windows Central over the coming months with a whole new gaming section, hopefully, for the website.
Yeah, I was going to say, site redesign.
Yeah.
It's been a long time coming.
But yeah, we'll see. Thanks for joining us, guys. We'll see you next time.